Hello, our guest this week is singer-songwriter Pierre Sfaccini.
Hope dreams, hope lies, while reality sleeps.
He used to be compared to Nick Drake, but he's now compared to no one. He just sings his songs, like this one, Hope Dreams, from his new EP, Hear My Voice.
And it cuts just like a knife, rolls on like a tear to bleed down my cheek. And it pulls just like a gun, firing straight to the heart. A black hole inside, leaves a black hole inside.
Faccini was born in London, he's half Italian, and he's now made his home in a beautiful and fairly wild part of the south of France, from where he runs his record label Beating Drum. He came into RFI to talk about the very handmade approach he has to songwriting and to making and publishing music. His Twitter handle says, "If my songs were maps, I would want them to stretch from the English moors to the Saharan dunes via the plains of the Mediterranean, a vast landscape indeed." So I began by asking him where he would situate the four songs on his latest EP.
On the EP, we'd probably just leave out the plains of the Mediterranean, because I sort of wanted to go back to my first inspirations in terms of songwriting. So the songs are very much coming from the African-American blues traditions and English folk and kind of British folk music. That's the conversation that you can hear in those songs in the EP.
And it burns just like a flame, brings fear to the bone. The fire inside, and I rage against the hope you lit under my skin that you love me again.
On this song, Hope Dreams, where you sing, and I rage against the hope you lit under my skin that you'd love me again. Will you love me again? It's kind of terrible to think you'd be struggling against hope.
The thing with those songs is that, you know, when you've written a lot of songs over the years, which I've done, the challenge is knowing that there are only so many narratives that you can spin as a storyteller, whether you're writing lyrics or you're writing a story. It's all in the detail. So sometimes the spark of a good song is just a slightly odd take on something, or just something that allows you to see something that's familiar with fresh eyes. And so the idea of Hope Dreams was simply the take on the idea that when someone's desperately hanging on to love and to a broken relationship that's just completely hopeless, there's a sort of addiction to the idea of hope. So the concept of this love song, because it's a love song, was the idea of equating this person who's desperately hanging on, hoping against hope, in the same way that an alcoholic might be in denial about their alcoholism and say, "Oh, well, it's fine, I'll come off the juice tomorrow."
Now I'm leaving out the dark for the love of the light to drown out the spark.
Writing songs is also, for me, it's all about being able to voice a particular kind of emotion. So that is probably my Italian side as well, slightly dramatic. But, you know, you want to embody certain emotions. I think that's what songwriting is about. So in this particular one, for example, I love flamenco, I love canto flamenco, and I love, like, the whole sort of very dramatic, nostalgic way of singing about love that you hear in the Mediterranean, also in southern Italian music. So I'm sort of almost taking that kind of language but using it in English.
Your smell is under.
Pierre Matthias, you're based in the Cévennes, in this very beautiful woody part of southern France, very rural. And you have your recording studio there. You also have your own record label, which is called Beating Drum.
That's right.
It says on the website, we create lovingly made objects that bring together music, art and writing. So there's a lot of emphasis on the handmade approach to making music. Just tell me where that's coming from.
I identify myself as being a painter who plays music. So my first love is painting. Went to art college. So when I started making music, everything that was image-wise that would be associated with putting out a record, from the record sleeve to a poster, to making an animation video, to just that whole way that you, aesthetically, you would dress a project. Well, I've drawing on my experience and my love of everything artistic. So when I started my own label, the idea was just to go as far as I could down that line of just, in a way, trying to do as much myself, but also just doing it in the most sort of lovingly detailed way, you know, just enjoying all of the different kind of objects and processes that there are to how you accompany a release.
And not being a slave to the music industry.
Being a slave to the music industry, absolutely. And also one of the things when one is in a way enthralled to the kind of standardized idea of the music industry, one thing that happens is that, you know, as an artist, you'll be like, oh, I really want to do a vinyl, gatefold vinyl. When you open it up, there's an inner sleeve, and then I want to put my paintings, and then the guy from the record company would be like, yeah, that sounds great, but we can't do that. We haven't got the money. This is how it's going to be. And then you have a bit of plastic with a CD in it, or you have the cheapest vinyl. And I sort of feel like with the way the music industry kind of unfolded and the way it's all sort of come apart slightly in terms of at least the physical objects, I feel like as someone who buys objects and books and records and vinyl, if I'm going to buy something, I really want it to be beautifully made. As a label, I'd rather make less, but better, as opposed to sort of mass-produced.
What would it take for a dreamer to wake? It could have been me. Line after line, the code was all mine, but who's playing?
Compared yourself perhaps to a farmer, sort of taking your wares to the public.
When I started the label, I wrote a little manifesto which was called Why Music is Food. So it's the whole thing about the idea that art and music is this form of nourishment. And it's like when you buy your oranges in the market and they've been sort of mass-produced and pumped full of pesticides and chemicals, they may not have the same nutritional value as ones that are, you know, grown without pesticides and
on the hills of Sicily.
On the hills of Sicily, exactly. In the sun as opposed to under lights or whatever. So I kind of was drawing that parallel, and I was also drawing the parallel with the idea of a farmer who decides to be independent from, say, perhaps a supermarket chain and decides to produce less but better, sell it for a bit more, but sell it to people who know that he's not cutting corners and are prepared to pay that little bit more, not only to support him in what he does or her, but also to support them in their kind of approach towards ecology, or, you know, the land, the respect to the land, the respect to animals, etc. So I think that there's that sort of aspect to it. And I think you just, the idea for us with creating the label was also to be able to have a kind of platform where we can really share ideas and just share a kind of enthusiasm about making objects and about making art and making music with the people that follow us.
Yes, you have a sort of broken falsetto voice, which, again, is not typical. What is it about the voice? Are you saying that the voice is the ultimate instrument, is the thing that actually to which you're most committed in
music?
Yes,
I think that's absolutely right. I would say that the voice, in a way, is the ultimate instrument, simply because it can do what no other instrument can do, meaning that it can carry melody and language at the same time. So obviously a cello can't do that, nor a drum or a guitar.
After frame, lay of the game, but he's playing who? It could have been you.
What is a voice? A voice is who you are, it's what you are, it's your ground. And so we were talking about, you know, the idea of nourishment and food. Food is grown on the land, so the voice comes from your ground. It's what you grow. When you hear an amazing singer, they'll grab you from the first note. There's something very mysterious about the voice, probably linked to the fact that the first thing we ever hear is the heartbeat of our mother and possibly her voice and the voices of other people. So there's something deeply sort of profound and mysterious about the voice. And then when you add the possibilities of being able to tell a story, to sing poetry or whatever, different languages, it does make the voice for me endlessly intriguing.
Blessed are the souls of men whose lives are given to the wind, and whose souls steer home and wander the plain, but whose ashes and dust they remain. Lay down your wreath, lay down your crown, lie and then go to the ground. Lay down your wreath, lay down your crown, cry and then go to the ground.
I love to explore the voice, you know, as an instrument, but I also love singers who just sort of sing the way they do and that's it, you know.
Like?
Well, I mean, you could think of, might be Nick Drake, who just sang the way he did, or it might be Bob Dylan, who's got an incredibly nasal voice. Some people can't bear it, but that's just the way he sings, you know. In folk music, I guess you have that thing where people just sort of sing the way that they're meant to sing.
Cursed are the wars of men that lay waste to terror and ruin, staining red the flowers of the land and the rivers that run red with blood. And lay down your wreath, lay down your crown, lie and then go to the ground. Lay down your wreath, lay down your crown, bow and then go to the ground.
When we listen to you performing with some West African musicians like Badji Tunkara on this song, The River, I was really struck by how this sort of English folk music seems to perfectly marry with West African percussion.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was really funny because Badji Tunkara, who plays the Ungoni, one time I was chatting with Badji and I was like, you know, when you don't listen to Malian music, what do you like listening to? And he said, oh, I really like listening to country music. And I said, oh, wow, that's interesting. And he's like, for me, it feels like our music. He said, la musique de chez nous. And I thought that was great because in a way, there's something strange, you know, that happens. Like when I heard Malian music, something was very familiar to me in the same way that when Badji hears, Towns Van Zandt from Texas singing a ballad, there's something familiar to him about it. And I think that when I was writing for that project, The River, I just had this sense that a certain kind of melancholy, almost sort of, you'd imagine like, you know, the moors with the snow, just somehow went really well with the Ungoni. And I'm not quite sure why or how, but it just, as soon as Badji started playing, I knew it was right.
Say you don't know, say I don't know, say you don't know, if tongues must speak, just say this. Say that you're lost, say I'm lost, say you're lost. If truth be told, tell me this.
Piers, I can't resist asking you just a little bit about Eton. So you were born in London, you went to Eton Public School, this very elitist school, which gave rise to the likes of David Cameron and Boris Johnson, a lot of politicians.
Yeah.
Not very many folk musicians or musicians, full stop, to my knowledge.
Some actors. Well, like Don West and Damien Lewis, they were all in my year. So.
And I just wondered, did Eton contribute to awakening you to music in any way?
The thing that Eton did was it, and I, by the way, I didn't last, I'm actually quite proud in a way, even if I gave my parents hell for it, but I was sort of expelled from Eton when I was 17. So I was a bit of a bad boy. So I would say that what Eton gave me more than anything was to resist absolutely everything that school stood for, you know? And so it kind of fostered a form of individuality and a stubbornness about wanting to do something that no one else in that school was really doing. So it kind of gave me a weird sort of self-belief just because I couldn't find it there, you know?
You didn't fit in.
Didn't fit in at all.
No, I won't
because of your Italian roots?
I think in part, growing up in the 70s and early 80s, you know, it was a different time then, you know. There was a famous example, and it's shocking to hear this today, to think that nothing was done about it. But I once, when I was about 14 at that school, went into beginning of term, sat down with our history teacher, and he came in, looked down the names, and he said, Patel, Ficini, stand up. So we looked at each other, we stood up, Patel, obviously, Indian origins. And he said, okay, find another teacher. And we were thrown out of his class. And I said, what for? And he said, I don't teach Neapolitans. And I said to him, my family's not actually from Naples. And he was like, get out. So how could you not be an outsider when that kind of thing's going on? You say, I don't belong. All right, well, I don't belong. I'm okay with that. And then you take your position as an outsider.
Well, maybe we can say thank you to Eton, actually, having thrown you out, because maybe you wouldn't have become the musician you have. Pier Svecini, thanks very much.
My pleasure, thank you.
Things that never change are better left unsaid. You need to let them go to let you get ahead. When words crowd in, let them go. Whisper to the wind, I don't know.
Hope you enjoyed today's show. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, just look for World Music Matters wherever you get your podcasts. Bye for now.